Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Welcome, welcome, Newsbusters listeners. We have reached the penultimate episode of the Dad Isn't Home miniseries of the Newsbusters podcast. We have a outstanding, tremendous, stupendous episode in store for you all today. As we have Joe Chalfant, newly minted lone conservative president and former Newsbusters intern, joining us in a little while. We'll be talking to him about lone conservatives' humble beginnings, what's to come, and what it's come to mean in the last 5 years for the movement, its mission, its challenges, and his time with us. Though I thought about asking him whether he still has his hearing after having listened to all of us scream at the TV and each other from time to time, but we'll just deep six that. We're not going to talk about that. As always, Nick Fondacaro is alongside here. Nick, what is going on?
Hey, Curtis, I'm looking forward to this interview in a little bit.
It's going to be sweet. So, alrighty-dighty, let's get started. If Ben Domenech's Fox News primetime episodes had the title American Crisis, which I highly recommend people go back and listen to, just some outstanding commentaries about where we are as a country, one could say my episodes, Nick, where I give the monologue, could be summed up with four words. They do not care. So 2 Mondays ago, we looked at the venomous rhetoric of Joy Reid, which I said would have been dangerous if James T. Hodgkinson were still alive. And we'll talk about this in a little bit with Nick, but we just passed 4 years since that horrendous incident at an Alexandria baseball field where nearly a dozen congressional Republicans were nearly murdered by a Bernie supporter and MSNBC viewer. So, and it feels as though the press, like most things, have learned nothing from that incident. And they've continued with their vile rhetoric, painting conservatives as enemies who get sugar highs off of suffering and dying people in a polluted planet, blah, blah, blah. And on Friday, I talked about the absolutely pathetic rehabilitation of Jeffrey Toobin, in which CNN, ABC's The View, and a few others have decided that publicly exposing and pleasuring yourself isn't actually that big of a deal. And as we saw yesterday, Brian Stelter had Jeff Toobin at his book party, just as someone was caught exposing themselves in Times Square. And Nick, I believe that they'll be getting a CNN job before too long here. So that brings us today, and rather focusing on one topic, I think I have a few things I want to hit on for you. First, I encourage everyone to go check out Bill D'Agostino's latest Newsbusters Explainer video. I believe it's his third. And really, objectively, this might be his best one yet. And in just about 3 minutes, so a little bit shorter than previous ones, he looks at the disinformation campaign by the left over the For the People Act, which would make China and Russia blush at its savviness here that the left has tried to pull over the American people. So let's take a listen to a portion of what Bill had to say.
Let's talk about the battle over new election laws. Last year during the pandemic, states adopted a lot of new and exotic voting techniques. Drive-in voting, massive vote by mail, unattended drop boxes, a lot of new and unprecedented stuff. So now states are moving to update their rules to make sure that only eligible voters are voting. And of course, Democrats are claiming that these new rule changes are restrictions and suppression motivated by racist Republicans. Instead of calling out the Democrats for their shameless hyperbole, the news media are helping them discredit any rules aimed at making elections more secure. You hear the same language over and over again, like an advertising campaign, because that's exactly what it is. As we listen to what the media are saying here, keep in mind, none of these laws would actually restrict any eligible citizens from voting on Election Day, or voting early, or voting by mail if they needed to. The claim that these laws would prevent voters from voting is fantasy. You don't get a home security system to keep out wanted guests. Anyway, let's dive in.
Republicans in at least 43 states now introducing bills to restrict access.
22 states have passed voter suppression laws.
Voter suppression laws that are advancing.
A Republican bill designed to suppress voting.
Voter suppression laws.
These voter suppression laws.
New voting restrictions law signed today.
One of the most restrictive.
One of the most restrictive.
It's one of the most restrictive voting bills in the country.
So obviously there's a pattern here, and of course, it's pretty negative in tone.
Well, now that's absolutely true. When the news media so blatantly lie and do what they do with a lot of stories, critical race theory, Lafayette Square, claims of Trump-Russia collusion, 1619 Project, lab leak theory, and I could go on and on. They simply disregard legitimate concerns and honest debate with two words, without evidence. Without evidence, without evidence. So without evidence allows them to skirt having to defend their ideas, proposals, or tweets on the merits. Instead, they really ostracize, shut down, attempt to shut down debate with those that they agree with by using bad faith attacks and, as we talked about last week, ascribing the worst possible motives to someone. On the subject of HR1, our intern Kevin Tober has another example that was stunning. Monday night, I believe, on Lion Bryan's MSNBC show, Real Clear Politics' A.B. Stoddard suggests that if the For the People Act doesn't become law, 2020 may have been, quote, the last free and fair election. Let's take a listen.
This whole problem with the For the People Act and dealing with all of the voting restriction bills passed around the country by state legislatures, by Republicans, is that we really can't be looking at the vote casting. And a lot of Democratic messaging has been on that. We have to focus on the vote counting and how corruptible it will be with the passage of these bills, how partisan and potentially rigged it will be. There's a lot of talk about water bottles and a lot of talk about closing windows for requesting an absentee ballot and how that disenfranchises voters of color. And that is true. The problem is that they have allowed this process to be completely partisan and corruptible. And we might have looked at our last free and fair election as a result. I think Cornell is right. You need to alarm voters about this in that way. If they lose the chance to pass a passable voting rights bill, they'll lose the midterm elections and they won't have to worry about infrastructure bills from now on, because they won't be back in power.
I don't even know where to go, guys, with this. So many people's brains have been broken, insanity lost during this Trump era. And I will concede that it is helpful to know where some people actually stand and where their true feelings lie. But that doesn't mean hasn't been sad to watch, because AB should know better. A lot of people will call seeing her, and I'm not sure if she still does, appear on Brett Baer's panel is kind of the liberal on Special Report. But goodness sake, this is just dumb. It really reveals what people actually want with the For the People Act. That they talk about Democrats rigging elections or Republicans rigging elections, but that's actually what they want to do. Very helpful. Very insightful. So last night, Joy Reid and real-life sidewalk-screaming preacher Sheldon Whitehouse talked about the real villain that's keeping America down and preventing everything from a clean planet to a Green New Deal to an all-electric car fleet powered by electricity that they won't talk about how it comes about, coal, natural gas, oil companies. That's right, oil companies, Koch brothers. So according to Joy, she and White House and like-minded progressives, elites, mind you, in New England, in New York, in D.C., in L.A., and so on and so forth, are just, quote, little folks out here who are not multi-billionaires and just want our planet to continue and want us to be a democracy. Okay, well, we are a media podcast and not one about the hypocrisy of liberal politicians, but I'm just going to say only 3.1% of White House's donors were from small contributors. Hat tip, Michael Duncan from Ruthless, great program. And in addition, his donations from Amazon and Google aren't exactly that of someone who's concerned about dark money. And he also has ties to dark money groups like 1630 Fund. So he's not exactly the most trustworthy person to talk about and decry money in politics. But if you're a Republican supporting Supreme Court Justice, Sheldon Whitehouse thinks you're a Manchurian candidate who only does what conservative interest groups tell them to do. Nick, I think someone should ask him how that worked out with John Roberts and Obamacare multiple times. I don't know. Anyway, to give you a preview of the stakes here, Reid demanded to know what can be done to ensure the For the People Act passes to somehow make elections fair again. White House said it would allow he and his colleagues to go to, quote, war against groups like Judicial Crisis Network and Heritage Action, using the government like, quote, an air force of like truth and light and exposure and transparency in showing who these rascals are. Sounds like a sicking of the IRS on your political enemies. I wonder how that worked out last time the Democrats tried to do that. Anyway, this feeble-minded, imprudent, witless nonsense can be uttered on television with the support of major corporate advertisers, which we list at the bottom of our blogs, by the way. We do this for you. Conservatives Fight Back page at the MRC website. We encourage people to check that out. And we do this because they simply don't care that what they're saying is insane. So I pull all this together because Dan Bongino said something really interesting on his Monday radio show that is, when you see a kooky story, read it upside down. And what he meant by that was, assume it's true, but really about the other side. So we have the PP tape of Trump and Russia hookers, allegations of that. You flip it around, and you have Hunter Biden and the laptop from hell. You have the claim that Trump and Russia colluded to steal the 2016 election. You flip it around. And we have Christopher Steele and a dossier that partnered with news organizations to try and undermine the Trump presidency. We do this over and over again. 2000 election, 2004 election, the list goes on. So in this case, you take what White House and Reid are saying about conservative groups and conservatives being controlled like puppets by creepy, quote-unquote, white men in cigar-filled rooms trying to control the government. Flip it around, and you see groups like the 1630 Fund, Justice Democrats, labor unions, and the most powerful one of all in the news media collaborating like a Politburo to direct the country in their favor. So before I bring Nick in, I just have one more thing. And yes, it's still on HR1, S1. Our Rich Noise had a fantastic study out yesterday that dove headfirst into the media coverage surrounding leftist proposals as well as GOP-led voter integrity measures. And in my not nicotine-stained hands, we're going to take a look here at this. So Rich found that looking at ABC, CBS, and NBC Evening News shows from March 1st through June 10th, found 52 minutes of airtime on a variety of Republican-sponsored state election laws. That compares to a meager 2 minutes and 40 seconds for Democrats' so-called For the People Act, national legislation that would override a host of state election laws, including popular voter ID rules. And as a shout-out to Jorge Bonilla, MRC Latino study found the same skew, as Telemundo, Univision, and CNN Espanol had nearly 35 minutes of coverage about GOP laws versus barely a minute about Democratic legislation. So it's pretty pathetic here what we're seeing here. And it translated to 96% negative coverage for GOP-sponsored laws. For the People Act, no debate, no controversy, moving on, nothing to see here. Which is very interesting because the left, they usually do one of two things. They flaunt exactly what they want to do or they hide it. And we've been seeing more of the hiding recently with critical race theory and For the People Act. They're not actually talking about what they want to do. They just say that it's great and would make elections fair. And critical race theory is just making sure that everybody understands our history and people who disagree with us are racists and are triggered, sad little children. So as I bring Nick in here, we have a lot to talk about here, and one of the things that I mentioned in my monologue and that you wrote about last night was it has been 4 years since the ball shooting in Alexandria.
Yeah, that it was a horrible event that actually occurred like not too far from where I live, and it absolutely devastating. And the networks over like so the anniversary was this past Monday. The networks, the ABC, CBS, and NBC have had two days, Monday, like mornings and evening newscasts. They've had four shows to talk about the anniversary, and they have not touched it at all, even though the lawmakers that were targeted had met on Monday to mark the anniversary. And on CNN on Tuesday, they had Andrew McCabe on, you know him, the disgraced FBI deputy director, who was fired for lying to investigators. They had him on, and he was sort of muddying the waters a lot on what the motive was with that shooting, because you had him talking to Kate Baldwin and sort of and saying that so that he thinks the FBI's like they're sort of
it was unclear it was, the motive was yeah. unclear just yeah. like with you know these terror attacks, they're like, the motive may, will we never know. We may never know what happened.
Yeah, he said they never, he said, quote, they never really uncovered any sort of detailed evidence that laid out a specific plot or an objective. Andy, he had a note on his person with the names of Republican lawmakers that he was targeting, asked somebody nearby if those were Republicans practicing on the field, and he was part of a Facebook group that says, terminate Republicans.
That would be motive, kids. That's pretty blatant right there. See, this is, again, this is what I talked about earlier, which is they know that they're getting away with lies like this. And we really just want to have an honest debate here. We know they're liberals, and that's fine. This is a free country. But when you're so blatantly dishonest about things like HR1 and the Alexandria Ballfield shooting and how you portray your enemies and your political adversaries as wanting you dead, bad things have happened and can happen. And, you know, people talk about marking January 6th. We don't deny that that was a horrible day, but that was Alexandria was pretty bad too here. And we just need to put this in perspective. And like usual, you can do walk and chew gum at the same time, and multiple things can be true at once. So, I mean, this is just pretty pathetic here as we go to wrap here. But you know who's not pathetic? Joe Chalfant of Lone Conservative, and we'll be back with him in just a few moments.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
And we're back. Nick is here with us, and let's get right into our interview. We've been planning this one for a couple of weeks now, and we are pleased to welcome to the Newsbusters podcast Joe Chalfant. He's now the president of Lone Conservative, went to Texas State, I believe, and a former Newsbusters intern. Joe, welcome.
Hey, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So for our listeners, let's first, before we get into you, we're going to talk about Lone Conservative. So talk a little bit about how Lone Conservative came to be and what makes it different from other conservative organizations, because without using names, you and I have talked about this a lot, and we often see the flashiness of others and how it's often the shiny object that makes a lot of attention. So, but I think what Lone Conservative does is really important, really unique. So if you could just explain that to our listeners.
Yeah, so Cassie Dillon, who is a wonderful woman who decided to found Lone Conservative to give conservatives across the country a place to write. If you have ever been on a college campus, you sort of know that you don't really have a place that you can go to express your ideas, you know, that the papers on college campuses generally don't want to publish your opinion. So you have to have an outlet that's willing to give you a voice. And that was originally the intent of Lone Conservative. And as it grew, it became more of a professional development organization. You know, a lot of great people, especially people that have gone on to intern at News or at MRC, have gone on to do great things within the movement.
Yeah.
And our sort of goal is to give people their first steps in their given field, whatever they want to do, whether it be policy writing, whether it be journalism, whether it be just general activism. Our goal is to give them a place to go. So what separates us from a lot of other organizations is that we are completely student-run, and nobody has ever taken a dollar in pay from what we have raised in funds. A lot of other organizations have a lot of overhead. They have to pay salaries. All the money that we get has gone strictly to activism, into promoting people's careers, into giving people the cert that they need to get their career going and to benefit the movement and to benefit the country.
Yeah, I think that's what's really unique and what I really love and why we have, it's been such a great partnership, I think it's fair to say, between Lone Conservative and Newsbusters and the rest of the MRC, because we know that the people that are coming to us are really high quality, with you being one of them. So I want to talk a little bit about yourself here. Because I read over your announcement that you were becoming the president from CASI, and there was a line here that really struck me, and I want you to talk about this, and you kind of alluded to it already, which is, quote, "I applied to Lone Conservative with zero political connections, no writing experience, and without a clue as to how I should begin my career. I'm doubtful that anyone else would have taken a chance on me, but CASI's organization did." I think a lot of young conservatives have felt that way. They really don't know where to start, and especially if you're interested in writing or policy writing background. So if you could just talk a little bit more, expand on your journey to Lone Conservative as well, and kind of how you've grown as a writer just by being around others.
So I think that a lot of people who are listening probably don't understand how tough it can be to get into this industry. It's really a connection-based industry. If you have to know people in order to go places. And if you don't have a person who's willing to take a chance on you because they don't know who you are, it can be hard to break your way in. There's no real sort of entry-level, quote-unquote, position for the especially conservative politics, unless you're working on a campus and you're working on sort of a door knocking campaign locally. But if you're wanting to get into writing, that doesn't exist for you. So whenever I was just scrolling through Twitter, I happened to notice that Ben Shapiro had retweeted an announcement from the University of California, Berkeley, about a speech that was going on their campus involving Antonia Okafor, Ali Beth Stuckey, and Cassie Dillon. The college Republicans there were putting on a speech with all these conservative women, and it was a fantastic discussion. And they mentioned that Cassie Dillon was a part of Lone Conservative, that she was the founder. And so I did a bit of research and found out that it was a publication for students who wanted to get into writing. And I decided to take a chance and go ahead and apply. I'm sure that my article was god awful, that it was just atrocious compared to what I'm writing nowadays. But, you know, besides that, they were still willing to take my piece and publish it and work with me. And once I started working here, I immediately got more involved in the organization. I became an editor, I became an operations assistant, helping with the sort of daily operations, comings and goings of the organization. And I dedicated myself to trying to improve myself and improving the organization that I was working in. And that eventually led to my internship at Newsbusters. This was my first internship in D.C. And in the article that you mentioned, I mentioned that I had to sleep on the floor in order to afford to live in Washington, D.C. But that was something that I was willing to do in order to come here and to get my start. And, you know, I'm very appreciative for the opportunity that you guys gave me, the chance that you guys took on me. And I'm appreciative of the relationship that we have with the Media Research Center, who is another organization that is willing to take people who may not be the biggest names in the conservative youth movement, but you're willing to go help people build their career and get their start.
Yeah, I just think that's so huge. You know, everybody has to start somewhere, and Nick and I both have stories probably about how we started, and I think that's a huge thing that, you know, young conservatives listening, as well as people who are older, who support all of us. We can't stress enough.
Yeah, because I know the MRC took a chance on me as an intern. It was my second internship in the DC area, and now here I am. And Joe, I definitely have to agree with you that my older writing is very cringe. When I go back and look at my stable of Newsbuster stuff, I'm like, I can't even click on it. I don't want to see it. Just pretend it's not there. So when it comes to like the writers like that, one of the things that I've noticed with Lone Conservative is that you guys boast like a very sizable stable of conservative writers from different parts of the conservative, the big tent. One of the things that interests me is, where do you see most of your writers coming from? And by that, I mean, like, are they coming from schools without college Republican groups or conservative publications? Or are they coming, or do you see some writers coming from schools with conservative reputations like Hillsdale and Liberty?
Well, there's sort of a mix of the two. So you have a lot of people who are involved in the movement who go to a bunch of student conferences and they promote the organization to try to get people, you know, involved and to start their career. But really behind the scenes, what has really made the organization what it is the recruitment online and the recruitment between friend groups. You know, you might know somebody who is interested in conservative politics, but they may not be involved in your college Republican group. They may not be involved in your YAF chapter, but they still want to go express their ideas. So, you know, a lot of students ask them, hey, would you like to go, you know, publish an article with Lone Conservative? They'd be happy to take you. And it gets them involved in the movement, and it might push them to join it as a career rather than as a hobby. Whereas those sort of students might not see any sort of way to join the movement at all if this didn't exist. And I think it's beneficial for that reason. But really, there's a wide variety of ways that people are getting involved. And it's not just limited to, you know, conservative, traditionally conservative schools. We have a lot of people from pretty left-leaning schools. I mean, Cassie, our founder, went to Mount Holyoke, which, for the people who don't know, is a radical leftist women's college in Massachusetts. It's a pretty disgusting place. So it's not just limited to, you know, the conservative strongholds.
So when you guys have them and they graduate, where have you seen your writers go? Because it you're definitely creating for them like a very nice portfolio for them to show recruiters and people reviewing their resume. So where have you started to see over the last few years your alumni go? Because I know Cassie, I believe, is now with Nikki Haley.
Stand for America. Yeah, she works at the nonprofit side of Stand for America, and does a lot of work for her that's pretty good. But we've had a lot of students go on to a ton of different publications, The Hill, The Daily Wire, Fee, The Daily Caller. We've had people go into the policy realm at Mercatus or at Heritage. We've had people go into, you know, campaigns, doing any sort of work that there possibly is to do in the conservative movement. Our alumni are doing it. I think probably the best example that your listeners might know is Greg Price, the sort of social media guru over at the Daily Caller. He was in the same intern class that I was in with Newsbusters, and he's gone on to be one of the top social media guys in conservative media. Another guy that was a Lone Conservative alum and a MRC alum, I think he was at MRC TV, Patrick Hoff, he just recently announced that he's going to the Washington Free Beacon, which is one of the best just newspapers, print media out there. So I'm pretty proud of that one. Lexi Lonas has gone on to The Hill, being one of their top writers. So there's no shortage of people going into conservative media, but we've also had people going into the mainstream media. It's not just limited to the conservative movement.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge important thing that Nick and I have talked about in our kind of Dad's Away on Vacation miniseries here hosting the Newsbusters podcast, which is there's a thirst for real solid journalism. Just because we're conservative doesn't mean we don't have standards, we don't have an editing process, you know, and we don't just not like we just take everybody. It's a very, you know, rigorous process that we have here, and I think that's why you guys have had so much success. And it's really refreshing because, as you just mentioned, Lexi, going to The Hill is a mainstream publication, for example. So, and we talked about this last week with Stephen Gutowski of The Reload, which is people are interested, both left and right, in sober reporting. And I think ever so slowly, those that are willing to engage in good faith have realized that conservatives can do this thing too. Conservatives can do this too. And that leads me into my next topic here, which is, you know, Nick talked about the stable of writers. And for me, the thing that struck me, and it still has ever since Cassie launched, which is the diversity of topics that you guys have on your homepage. You know, our friends at Campus Reform will talk about campus censorship, and that's their beat, and that's really great. With you guys, you're talking about everything. You know, your homepage right now has everything from Arctic drilling to a piece about the American flag, price of gasoline, to even being a conservative in a liberal family. So if you could talk about kind of the importance of that, that I'm sure that Cassie saw and that you see as well. And then secondly, do you think it's really helped young conservatives kind of find their voice in terms of what they're interested in? Because I know, just like you're saying, you had no idea where to begin your career. I think some people had no idea what topics really interested in them. They knew they were conservative and the left was bad, but they find their legs, you know, with a particular issue.
Sort of like picking a major when you're going into college and you're like sort of you might go through a couple different majors.
Right.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. For example, I think that I'll take myself on this one. I had come into the politics and I was very interested in domestic policy, specifically tax policy, which is a very nerdy topic that a lot of kids probably wouldn't be interested in. But as I got more into writing, reading, and researching, I found out that tax policy is incredibly boring and that it was something that I didn't want to talk about. So I got more into the foreign policy research, and I found that to be quite a bit of fun. And then I moved gravitated even more towards regulatory policy. I found regulatory policy a very interesting topic that a lot of people should be discussing. Other people sort of find their niche too, and they find their interests. I think that giving a person an opportunity to be able to talk about whatever topic they want to is probably one of the more beneficial aspects of Lone Conservative for helping establish their career, because it can give them credibility on a topic. If they can go, whenever they're looking for their first job, if they want to get a job at, let's say, like Mercatus or Heritage or at another think tank, and they can say, well, I've published 20 articles on foreign policy over at Lone Conservative about China specifically. So if you need someone who's willing to research stuff on China, I'm your person to do it. It gives them credibility to back up their claim that they're, one, interested in this topic and that they would be a good voice and person to do that research for them and to take that career path. Other organizations focus more on, you know, as you said, Campus Reform focuses on their beat, and they do a fantastic job of that. There's a few other organizations out there that cover college topics as well as Campus Reform. But what I'm proud of is building an organization that can cover whatever topic anybody has an interest in, whether it be sports and, you know, transgender movement into sports, whether it be in foreign policy, whether it be in tax policy. We give a person a place to write about whatever they're interested in.
Yeah, I think that's really big. And you mentioned that there's been over 450 people that have written for Lone Conservative. And I think that's just absolutely mind-blowing in 5 years, I guess, now, 2016. So, I mean, that's just astronomical. And if you look at your masthead, and I encourage people to look at their leadership here below Joe, and, you know, and also the website itself, it's presented in a very professional manner, which I think is really important to provide a level of seriousness and sobriety to it, which again goes to my previous point about there being such a thirst for sober journalism and honest commentary that's well-researched and very genuine here. This isn't just, you know, people might think that, oh, a bunch of young conservatives, they just kind of throw up whatever they want on their website and they just kind of go with it. But like, you guys have like an entire staff, or, you know, you talk about not taking pay, but in terms of leadership positions, you guys have, you know, social media team, you have a very well put together website that doesn't look like it was, put together in a middle school computer science class or something like that. And I mean that because, yeah, I think it all matters. Everything matters, and really to give you a leg up. And I just, I think that's really beneficial.
Gives a level of polish for potential employers, for the writers, where they go when they go to look at their catalog of stuff they've written about them, like, oh, they take what they do very seriously.
Right. Yeah. Because I'm sure for you, it's like some people have never really worked with an editor before. And that kind of process, writing a headline, writing a lead, because you can go to trainings, and we encourage people to do that with LI, for example, but until you eventually need to have the rubber meet the road. And I think that's what's really important for conservatives here, because I think, for so long, for obvious reasons, you'll be writing term papers in college. And even if you're going to a conservative university, you're still writing research papers, which is great. And if you're going into that field, but for those of us that write in news, it is a different animal. It is a different animal.
And also Lone Conservative has won an award for their work.
Yeah, through ISI, who's a wonderful organization that promotes a lot of conservative writers, we've won their top publication award for really the all of the aspects of the organization. It's not just limited to the writing. It's not just limited to the editing or the website. It's all that stuff coming into coordination with each other to create what we have. You talk about the website, being something that looks professional. Again, that's something that students have done, that students are working on to create. We aren't using professionals to develop any of our social media. We're not using them to design any of our merchandise. We're not using them to design our website. We give students an opportunity to do all of that sort of work at Lone Conservative. So it's not just limited to the writing stuff. I want to give people an opportunity to begin a career in media, in social media, in web design, in just general leadership. We have a lot of people, as you mentioned, our pretty well-staffed leadership team, doing all sorts of different things. We've got, Bible studies, chess clubs, book clubs. We have a stocks club where they discuss finances. So it's not just limited to the writing. If somebody wants to do something and they want to go help other people, Lone Conservative is really a community where people have come together to build that sort of thing.
Yeah. No, it really becomes a family. And again, that's a real preview, again, for how a lot of us work in conservative media. We become a family. Some days you like each other. Other days you don't like each other. It is you want to kill each other. But, at the same time, it's a really good first step to really find community here. And that's the thing. There are people that have gone on to do big things, but yet they're still very loyal and speak so highly of Lone Conservative. And I think that's important where you when you foster a group of people who don't forget where they came from. I think that is just huge.
Yeah, if I'm going to give any advice to anybody who's wanting to get into the movement, it's that loyalty is the number one currency that you can have in politics. There's a lot of people who are willing to take a chance on you, and I wouldn't be quick to forget that. The Media Research Center has, a really organization that was willing to give me my start. And I'm very appreciative of that. And I'm appreciative of the work that you guys are doing to give people who are in my position, who really didn't have any sort of future in politics before I started joining organizations like Lone Conservative, before I started working with you, their place to go in order to build their career.
Yeah. So with just a couple minutes left, just want to give you the important plug here. How can someone find out more about Lone Conservatives as well as support your mission, in addition to the fantastic swag, which is pretty, which is always a must, especially for those of us that have gone to CPAC. I recall the Brett Kavanaugh koozie. That was a very hot item. But find out more about, how can people find out more about merch as well as supporting you guys?
Well, going to loneconservative.com and just reading articles that students are willing to take time to write would be the first thing. Following us on social media at LO Conservative on Twitter and at Lone Conservative on Instagram to go see the content that a lot of students are developing for your entertainment is also another way. If you want to follow me specifically, I'm at Joe Chalfant on Twitter. I would encourage you guys just to go follow us and to go keep up with what students are doing nowadays.
This has been fantastic. Thanks for coming on, Joe. And yeah, keep up the great work. And, you know, we'll always be willing to continue to further this conspiracy cahoots, so to speak.
Of newsbusters, people putting out our
feelers to Loco. Yeah, we've infiltrated as many places of the conservative media as possible. Well, that's it, folks. Tune in on Friday, where we hope to have another guest. We usually only do one guest a week, but I think we hope to have one this Friday. They're in-house. We'll just say, Jorge Bonilla has had an amazing couple of weeks, breaking some amazing stories. So he will join us then to recap what's been going on in Florida and Central America and all that nonsense as well before Tim Graham comes back next week. So until then, go buy some Lone Conservative merch. Then go over to the Newsbuster store to look at a Newsbusters t-shirt in its amazing fluorescent orange. And we'll talk to you later. Thanks for listening.